We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Steve Kerr is brought to you by Harris Hoisting. Steve, I lied. I got an MVP thing for you. But first, you're in Boston. Is it like snowing right now? It sounds like a disaster over there.
It was snowing this morning, and it's been raining ever since. I'm looking out my window. I have not been outside all day. So I'm disappointed too. I was hoping to go to Fenway and catch a ball game, and that's not.
And what a ball game it would have been too, because I happen to know the team that's playing the Boston Red Sox this weekend, and man, they got some guys you want to see, Steve. Let me tell you that. Speaking of MVPs, I want to ask you, because look, I know you can't comment on the actual MVP race, but we've sort of been talking about the process and the criteria. Did you ever vote for MVP when you were a member of the media?
I did. Yeah. Yeah. Not every year, but there were a few years in there where I got a vote.
So I'm curious, when you had that vote, what were your sort of criteria? Because what I've learned is the NBA does not really give you any criteria. Like, what did you value the most in making those decisions?
Well, to me, it always came down to one of, you know, three people. It was pretty simple to me. There was never more than like three, at the most four, candidates. And to me, you got whoever they are. They're obviously great players. They're generally impacting winning. So you eliminate, you know, the great players who are on average teams, and you end up with, you know, the three, four best guys on, you know, the three, four best teams. So that was my criteria. I factored winning into everything, rookie of the year, all that stuff, because I think that's the whole point of the exercise.
Where did you start with really good guys on really good teams, or did you start with really good guys and then use what the record of the team was as sort of a secondary or tertiary tiebreaker?
Yeah, I picked the guys who I thought were the best, you know, best candidates, the three or four obvious guys, and then I went from there, and you know, winning, that's where winning became the separation point. But you know, the hard part is sometimes that only cuts one guy out, you know. So now you still may have three people, and all three guys play on winning teams, and you got to continue to think about it.
Steve, let's bring it back around to what you're seeing on a nightly basis right now. You've obviously played with Michael and a slew of other Hall of Famers, but have you ever seen a player like Steph on the run that he's been on over the last few weeks?
Well, I have, but it's also different because they're different players. There was a stretch in Kobe Bryant's career when I was still playing, so this would have been maybe 2002 or 3, where I think he scored 40 five or six times in a row, maybe more. But I remember there was a stretch for Kobe like that, and it felt like Michael had stretches like this too. It's different because of how Steph does it compared to Kobe and Michael. You know, those guys dominated by getting to the line and scoring at the rim. There's never been anybody who has done it like Steph is doing it by shooting, you know, step back 26 footers and knocking down an ungodly amount of them for, you know, 8-9 straight games. Nobody's ever done it like this.
This is your first 4-game win streak. Is this, in your mind, the breakthrough you've sort of been predicting? Are we watching it?
It feels like it, you know, and it doesn't necessarily mean anything going forward, but I know just the way things feel right now, there's an energy about the way our team is playing. Our defense seems to be more engaged. The ball's moving. So this, to me, is the best we've played all season, and it feels like we've got good momentum.
And how much of that to you is in part because of just out of course of necessity via injury and missed games, your identity has sort of been defined as this specific small run and gun basketball team?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is something to that. I mean, you guys know I've been saying that this run was coming for the last few weeks. I've felt it coming. So it's not just about personnel. I thought this was coming, you know, when you know, James was starting at center a couple of weeks ago and really starting to feel more comfortable with what we were doing and, you know, having him diving to the rim and you know, he started to get really into a place where he was more comfortable. So I felt a run coming regardless of you know, personnel and what was happening. But there's no doubt that, you know, playing Draymond at the five or playing Looney, who's been here for 5 years, there's just a comfort level because these guys have been together for so long. And I think that comfort level is contributing to just the energy that we're playing with because everybody knows exactly what's coming and you know, that matters. You can play quicker. You can make quicker decisions when all five guys are on the same page.
In terms of the energy of what you're talking about, your last five games have been played in a way that you've allowed fewer points than you're averaging allowing to other teams. Is that where you first look at the energy to see if you're getting not only just defensive effort, but successful defensive effort?
Yeah, I mean, we always look at everything, and sometimes, you know, the stats might be a little different than what you're looking at, but usually they go hand in hand. And I think on-ball defense is really important, you know, just getting into the ball, setting a tone at the point of attack. And I think, you know, one of the things you've seen the last couple of nights is Juan Toscano-Anderson has made a real impact defensively. Obviously, last night, he also went 8-for-9 from the field. But the ball pressure from Juan, the ball pressure from Kent Bazemore as well, has set a good tone. And then at the other end of the floor, the ball's really moved. And you know, playing Draymond at the five, the ball always moves because we run more pick and roll and he gets the ball in the pocket. And, you know, the defense is spread out because we've got shooters out there. And so that combination of, you know, really good energy on the ball combined with playing Draymond a lot at the five, I think it's led to a really good rhythm.
You brought up Juan there, and obviously last night probably the best game of his career, but boy, he's just a guy, and we've talked about this before with you, who just seems to do so many good winning things on the floor. Does a performance like last night make you want to find more spots for him to get on the floor? Because obviously playing time has been tough for him to find consistently.
Yeah, I mean, I've wanted to play him, you know, since really, you know, last year, at the end of last year, when I got to know him as a player and I got to feel his impact, I've loved the guy. And, you know, the problem is there's not always minutes for everybody, as we well know. I mean, we got a lot of talented players, and you try to find combinations that work. The thing that I really like about Juan is he seems to fit in almost any combination because of his basketball IQ and his energy. If you know how to play and you play with energy, you're generally going to fit into a group. And as a young player, and I realize he's 28, but he's still a young player in terms of being in the NBA, the whole key is just to take full advantage of your opportunity when you get it, and then you can establish yourself as a more consistent performer and somebody who has more cachet around the league. And that's what Juan is doing. That's what Damian Lee is doing too. You know, both guys I feel like I can always count on. Every time they go out there, they just know what they're doing and they fit whatever we're trying to do. It's great. It's a great luxury to have as a coach, have guys like that.
Steve, yesterday, obviously, we get the unfortunate news on James Wiseman. He needed that more intricate meniscus repair, and he's going to be out for several months. As you look back now, especially a day after hearing about the news, how would you sum up how you think his rookie season went?
Well, I think all in all, his season has been really promising. I think, you know, everything has to be put into the scope of you know, perspective of how young he is, how little experience he's had. And you know, you compare him to people who have in the past who have been in a similar position, whether it's, you know, a guy like Kevin Garnett or Jermaine O'Neal or, you know, young big guys who didn't have much experience. So you put it in that lens and you think, all right, this guy played, you know, 40 plus games. He clearly is skilled and athletic and big, and he moves like a gazelle, and he's pretty skilled. You know, he would knock down threes, and you know, he scores around the basket really easily. So you take all that, and you obviously see how raw he is at the same time. It's like, okay, we got to be patient and we got to work. But man, he is so promising and so gifted, and we're devastated for him, you know, that with this injury, and it's such a shame. He's had such a rough go between missing training camp and, you know, then the wrist injury and now this. So it's been a rough go, but he's really a promising talent and a great, great young guy.
And I realize how high everybody is on that talent. I mean, we've seen flashes of it all season. I know in talking to Draymond and Steph, they feel the same way. But you mentioned that word raw a couple times. Is James even a little more raw than you thought he was going to be when he was coming in and you made the pick a few months ago?
Well, I think the hard part was we just didn't have much of a sense of how raw he would be, because we only had three college games of his, you know, to look at on tape. So, but you kind of, you know, you always go into a situation knowing big guys take longer to develop than guards. It's just a fact. So I think, you know, 100% when we picked him, it was, this guy is really talented and he's a great kid, and he's young and he's got, you know, a long career ahead of him. So however long it takes, you know, he's going to be well worth the pick. And you know, this is, and I know, you know, we can further the conversation and say, what about the, you know, the timeline with Steph and Draymond and Clay, and what does that mean? And those are valid questions. You know, can we get James, you know, up to speed quick enough to match the timeline of our three core guys? And that's a great question, and we don't know the answer. But you know, when you go into a draft and you see somebody who you feel like is potentially, you know, a generational talent, then you know, that's a decision you have to make.
So I think this question is part of that bigger question. But now that you sort of know what the summer looks like for him in terms of rehab, what are the things that you guys can do to help progress him as a player when, you know, getting out into an NBA game is not available to him?
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's the real shame of all this. You know, it's such a bummer. I mean, you know, because once you have a year under your belt as a player, you feel so much more comfortable because you know what's coming, you know what to look for. And we were really looking forward to a great summer with James, you know, not only in the weight room and the training room with our training staff, but on the court at Summer League. And what happens with young players generally is they kind of take a leap once things come together. And So we felt like this was a real opportunity this summer to you know, get him prepared for that leap next year. And obviously that's going to be pushed back, because all you can do in a time like this is watch film and walk through stuff on the floor. And that's what we're going to be doing with him. But we're going to do plenty of it. You know, we're going to really try to help him progress, you know, in terms of his ability to read the game and see the game. But obviously we're limited in how much we can do.
Does the ratio of sort of classroom work to, you know, practical work on the floor therefore change to the point where when he's finally ready physically, would you expect him to be almost fully game ready, sort of mentally and emotionally, because of the time off that you will have had to have spent with him away from the floor? Or does that push everything back?
No, it pushes things back. You know, you there's only so much you can do. Players have to feel, you know, the game, and they have to see the game, and they gain that experience through playing time, whether it's in practice or in the game. And it's just like anything else. You know, if you took some child prodigy who played the violin, you can't throw them immediately into the Philharmonic, right? It just takes a lot of experience. Now you can train them, and but ultimately, in whatever field somebody's in, it's just going to take time, and so that's what we're looking at, and this injury is pushing that back. There's no question about it, but we still feel very, very confident that James is going to be a hell of an NBA player, and he'll get there.
Steve, to follow up on that quickly, how long, having now worked with James for about a year and having been with Clay all these years, how long do you think it will take to get James comfortable, continue to get him comfortable in the system next season, and then reintegrate Clay into everything you guys have been doing the last couple of years?
It's a great question, and it's a fair question, and my answer is I have no idea. And I that's just the truth. I mean, you just don't know. One thing about the NBA that I've learned is the only thing you know is what's right in front of you. And when you know something, that's really valuable. You know, when you don't know something, then it's all just conjecture. And I bring that up by saying, look, you know, if we know that we have the best backcourt in the league in Steph and Clay, and I'll just take this back, you know, 6 years ago, and we know we have a top five defense in the league, then we should probably stay firm with this instead of trading Clay Thompson. Okay, because if you trade Klay Thompson for Kevin Love, which was, you know, that was the rumor 6 years ago, now you got all this stuff that you're just trying to predict. How good is this team going to be with Steph Curry and Kevin Love versus what do you know right now? So that's how I look at the league. And unfortunately, you don't always know what's in front of you, you know, because you know, usually you're in a position where you're trying to build a team and trying to figure things out. But when you know something, that's valuable. So that's how we operate.
Well, then this kind of segues into this perfectly. Do you feel like you know enough about James where you would stand on the table and say, hey guys, he's 20. We see the talent. Let's keep him out of any possible trade conversations?
Well, you know, yeah, that was well done, well played, you know, Nick.
He's a professional,
how many people,
Steve,
are truly untouchable, you know, in the NBA in terms of a trade. I don't know. LeBron,
seven.
Steph, and Giannis, and that's about it. I mean, yeah. if you really want to get down to it. So, that's everybody is tradable, you know. Wilt Chamberlain got traded, Kareem got traded. You never know what's going to happen, what's going to come out, and obviously that's Bob's job. But you know, in this business, you know, you never know how it's going to play out. But what you value is good young talent, and James is a really, really promising young talent. And we love him on a personal level with his work ethic and his maturity. So we've got a really good prospect, and we're excited about him.
As far as the here and now goes of what you can control, Kel Oubre was supposed to get a workout in, I know, in Boston. Is there any chance he plays tomorrow against the Celtics?
Yeah, I think he's questionable now. He'll go through shoot-around tomorrow, and we'll have a better feel after that.
Okay, now that we let the professional journalist really have a go at you, Steve, I'm going to try to make an easier question for you here. Do you feel like Draymond Green's positive impact is being even more underestimated than normal because of the decrease in scoring?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Draymond impacts winning so dramatically on a nightly basis. And, you know, and the good thing is he's clearly being more aggressive offensively, and I think that matters. I think when he does score in double figures, it seems to make a big difference in winning and losing. But I've seen him win a million games without scoring at all. Just with his intelligence and his defense and his intensity. So I think Draymond's had a hell of a year, and love coaching him, love watching him play every night, and love working with him. And it's just been a joy to work with Steph and Draymond together, and obviously Clay when Clay is healthy. What a dream for someone like me to, you know, come into coaching for the first time and inherit a group like that. Amazing.
With 16 games left, are you finding that your focus on the conference standings tends to go with teams above you now or teams behind you? Because it looks like, other than New Orleans, nobody else is going to be able to catch you. So is the instinct to look ahead at Memphis, to look ahead at Dallas, teams like that, rather than behind you?
I look at everything. I look at both, and you know, I look at it every day. And I look at the scores at night, and you know, hope for the best for us.